I don't know what was coming out of the sky today. I've never seen that in the last few years. It's the strangest thing I've ever seen, this notion of constant, steady rainfall at ever-increasing quantities, driven up by trucks that are going by that make it impossible to see anything. So I hadn't seen any of that since my days in New York. I thought what I would try to do today is just speak for a little bit, hopefully getting your juices flowing, and then spend a little bit of time with open comments or questions from all of you. And I just ask you to sort of bear with me, because I want to walk you through a logic as to why it is that sustainability is such an important topic for universities to be working on, and why it is very important, I think, for the Oregon University system to have this as one of your key areas of focus. So let me just sort of systematically walk you through a level of logic working to sustainability as an outcome of this logic. And then from that, I'll talk a little bit about what we've done at Arizona State University. Just as a sidebar, Arizona State University this semester is about 70,400 students operating in 14 colleges located in four operating environments around metropolitan Phoenix. And I won't walk through how we do that or how we don't do that. We don't have campuses. We don't have campus leadership. We have 14 colleges that operate, that are supported by a group at the center of the institution. So, what are we, first of all? And we have to sort of come to some agreement. If you're from the University of Oregon or Oregon State or Arizona State or Southern Oregon or Eastern Oregon or Portland State, whatever the whole list of schools are, we're all the same thing. Everybody sitting in the room today, we are all basically parts of or extant knowledge enterprises. So we are knowledge producers. We produce three things. We might vary a little bit institution by institution, a little more of this, a little less of that. But at the same time, as a knowledge enterprise, and it's most important that you get this concept of knowledge enterprise into your mind, we happen to be called universities. University of Phoenix is called a university also, but it's not a knowledge enterprise. No, it's not. Seriously, it's not. It's a purveyor of knowledge that someone else produces. We are knowledge enterprises. We do three things. We produce people, we produce new ideas, and we produce new things, or things that have this very technical term called stuff. Now, how do we as knowledge enterprises work? And this is also what separates us from other things that refer to themselves as universities. And the term university is a misused term, an overused term, an overly generic term. I was looking at some website the other day. There was all kinds of people calling themselves universities, the University of Massage or the University of this or that. And so I think that people sometimes get confused about that term. And so just keep in your mind this notion of knowledge enterprise. So as a knowledge enterprise, how do we work? I talked about what we produce, people, ideas, and stuff. How do we do it? We do it by creating, and each of the institutions represented here today work a little bit differently. We do that by creating an environment where teaching is our highest order function, with dedicated and committed teachers. We create learning environments among and between our teachers, among and between our students, between our students and our teachers, and among and between our institutions and the outside problems that we work on. That's the learning environment. And we also discover. So, we are a knowledge enterprise. We produce people, things, and stuff, and we do it through teaching, learning, and discovery. Certainly nothing new in those concepts, except for the following as it relates to sustainability. What we teach and how we teach it and what we focus on to discover and how we create learning environments determines what we are as a society. Those of us sitting in this room have this as a responsibility. What we teach, what we choose to teach, how we choose to teach, how we learn, how we choose to create the learning environment, what we focus on in terms of discovery, determine who we are. There's a phrase that I've used increasingly in some talks that I've given. We are what we teach. And so if you don't like it, look in the mirror. We are what we teach. And we teach what we discover. So, if true, if then, we are what we teach, why are we hurtling toward environmental disruptions, natural system decline, and unnecessary human suffering and pain in the decades or centuries that lie ahead of us? Because of what we teach, because of what we learn, because of how we teach, and because of how we discover. And it's because, and I think there's no mistake about this, there's no mistake about it, it's because we, the leading knowledge enterprises in the United States, the most sophisticated, and supposedly the most sophisticated and advanced culture yet to have evolved on the planet, it's because we, as these leading knowledge enterprises, are trapped inside a rigid set of social constructs, a rigid set of cultural constraints, a rigid set of variables that make us do anything that we possibly can other than take responsibility for what we do, and keep us from being able to actually focus on the outcomes that we think society or the environment or whatever actually should have, like sustainability. We are trapped inside a culture that we perpetuate, that we even work to strengthen in many ways, although this meeting and these meetings are intended to help to alleviate some of that. But we are knowledge enterprises trapped in paradigms that allow us to not focus on outcomes. So, if sustainability is an outcome, so if you imagine that there is the natural environment and the built environment, and the natural environment moves along just fine without us, it does whatever it does, working as a natural system, evolving as a natural system, and then we come along as a powerful force affecting it through our built environment. It's that relationship between what we build and what we do and that natural system which supports us, that it is either sustainable or not. And I don't know if we took a vote in this room, how many of you think it's sustainable over the next 500 or 1,000 years on the same trajectory that we are on? And I am the eternal optimist and always hopeful. And when I was a professor at Columbia University for 12 years, I held the chair in science and technology policy, so in theory, I thought about some of this stuff. It's not sustainable. Zero chance. Zero. It's not sustainable on the trajectory that we are on today. So, here we, the knowledge enterprises, also called or commonly referred to as universities, we have failed to be the teachers that we need to be. As a result, I've heard that there are some issues relative to ocean fisheries. I've heard there's issues relative to the four remaining wild species that we eat, salmon being one of them. I've heard there's issues relative to something going on in the atmosphere, some kind of carbon dioxide thing, and potential global warming, and a bunch of boneheads arguing about it from one perspective, and a bunch of other people arguing about it from another perspective. I've heard there's synthetic chemicals in every molecule, in every glass of water that you're drinking. There's synthetic chemicals, man-made, going into your body. Food chain, about everything we've eaten, is somehow influenced and affected. Food supply, everything is somehow influenced. And so how is it that we've gotten to this point where the sustainability of the built environment and the sustainability of the natural environment is actually in question? How could it possibly be the case? And so I'm arguing that we have failed to be the teachers that we need to be. Now, if you're a part of a knowledge enterprise and you believe even 50% of what I'm talking about, and many of you in this room probably do, and you assume that, in fact, the knowledge enterprise lays the foundation for things like the economic theories that are so inadequate for us to make decisions about things more than a few decades into the future. Or the fact that we work in areas of chemistry and other areas of science where we develop chemicals and advance these chemicals into their use without ever, at least in the past, giving much consideration as to what their long-term impact might be. We have to then go back and put the mirror as close to our face as possible and say that we need a fundamental reworking of the concept of the university itself as a knowledge enterprise. How about a knowledge enterprise which can focus on fundamental understanding, which universities have mastered, gaining fundamental understanding? And this is an arguable point and one that I'm happy to argue with you. But fundamental knowledge for what? Fundamental knowledge towards what outcomes? How about focusing on developing fundamental knowledge where you actually have an outcome in mind? Or how about fusing disciplines together so that some of these things that we might not actually be able to fully understand, we might actually have some pathway of understanding? I still find it shocking when I speak to my youngest child who's 11 years old and I say to her that there's a very high probability that what you just saw on that show that we just watched, also known as a polar bear, won't exist at the time that your children are alive. And she says, "How is that possible?" I said, "I don't really know, but it's really complicated. Apparently there's chemicals that are being put into the atmosphere from manufacturing plants in Thailand that are somehow getting into the food system that are somehow concentrating in the seals that the polar bears are eating with certain chemicals, and then there's that, and then there's climate change, and there's this, and this, and this." And she looks at me and she just says, "How is it even possible?" And I know the answer is, I don't know the answer. Why don't I know the answer? I'd argue that I don't know the answer because we have not found a way to answer questions like that. We only think we have the answers. And so another fundamental mechanism for reworking the concept of the university as a knowledge enterprise is to work to transform social behavior through new knowledge and new teaching. If it is the case, in fact, that the built environment and the natural environment must move forward in a way where the natural environment must be maintained at some level of resilience, at some level of productivity, at some level of natural transformation, if that, in fact, is the case, why is it that everyone that we teach doesn't understand that? The people that go on to become public officials, the people that go on to lead banks, the people that go on to build railroads, the people that go on to build jets, the people that go on to build communities and design communities, whatever they are, how come they don't all know this? Because we haven't figured out how to get someone to understand something like that across all disciplines yet. So, in looking at that mirror at Arizona State University, 9 years ago, we began a project to really refocus our institution in a new way, and I'm going to walk you through some of the things that we have done. But let me say that the experience that we've had at ASU follows the 11 years that I worked as the founder and the director of a thing called the Earth Institute at Columbia University. And so for 11 years, I worked as a part of a team and was ultimately the lead designer and ultimately the first director of that institute, which was an effort to try to just link 10 or 15 disciplines together through significant resistance at a highly established, highly stable, wealthy institution. And it was amazingly difficult and challenging to be able to figure out how to do that. And so at ASU, we set out on a course to now just not link just a few disciplines together, but actually to restructure the fundamental trajectory of the institution itself. And so to do this at Arizona State, we focused the last 9 years on several things. First, redesigning the institution to be, and you guys will have to ponder this when I say this, because it's like, I have no idea what this gibberish means that he's talking about. To redesign the university to be a purposeful institution driven towards certain outcomes that we are accountable for, as opposed to just another generic state university that looks, smells, and feels and acts like all of the others, hundreds of them that are around the country that just do the same thing. And that's been a very, very challenging undertaking for us. Very challenging. But it has begun with the reconceptualization of the design of the institution itself. If you go to our website, asu.edu, and you go to the little button on the bottom right that says New American University, you'll see the design aspirations that we have outlined for ourselves that we've been working for, working towards, struggling with, trying to advance the university on a different trajectory. The second thing that we've done specifically and related to sustainability is to make sustainability a central teaching, learning, and discovery objective of the university itself. Central. As important as English, as important as teaching the concepts of liberty and justice, sustainability as a value, as an outcome that we work toward, was moved to the central stage of the institution. It doesn't mean that we have done everything and become everything and all of a sudden that we're, you know, this wildly, unbelievably changed institution. We are all of those things, but it is a process. But the first part of the process is to redesign the concept of the institution as to a purposeful institution rather than a generic institution with specific purposes. And then second, to make sustainability one of those outcome purposes that you work toward. And then lastly, and I think very importantly, is that you have to make then sustainability a core value of the very way the university works. So we have these values in the university. They come from different segments in the history of education. A lot of our core values were laid down by Plato and Aristotle and the other folks that were running these academies in the hills around Greece. And then as the European universities evolved, we took certain values about free and open discourse, and then ultimately the scientific method as it was derived from various parts of the globe, but then concentrated in Europe. And we've taken on these different values. Those are methodological values, not necessarily related to outcomes. And as we know from history, those methodological values, such as the scientific method, can be applied equally to good or evil. So they are not the basis for the actual operation of the institution toward a specific outcome. They are but the basis under which the institutions operate as a mechanism in which they create knowledge, carry out discovery, or carry out teaching. So there's a fundamental thing that I'm arguing for here, and a fundamental thing that we're trying to do, and I'll emphasize the word trying at ASU, is to make sustainability a core value of the institution in everything that we do. Now, to do that, and I won't give you the list of everything that we've done, but I'll just give you sort of a sense of what we're working on. First, we had to get up and stand up and say in front of everyone, regardless of the political outcomes, regardless of the backlash of conservative group X or libertarian group Y or liberal group Z, we had to get up and be able to say sustainability is a core value of the institution. We're working toward that as an outcome. The social, cultural, economic, political, and so forth implications of us working towards sustainability, that's what we're going to do. Now, you don't just snap your fingers and do that, but you do have to be able to stand up and say that you're going to do that because there is resistance to anything. The second thing is we established an all-university institute. All-university. It's the only one we have. It's called the Global Institute of Sustainability. And its purpose is to take every brain that we have that's interested in sustainability as an outcome, whether they're a literature professor or an engineering professor or a political science professor or whatever they are, whether they're a sustainability professor, whatever they are, they have a place where they can come together in this Global Institute of Sustainability. We now have about 300 scientists and scholars in this institute connecting across dozens and dozens and dozens of units. And this institute has as its intellectual focus the creation of a teaching, learning, and discovery environment on the scale of a university related to sustainability. It is somewhat akin to the notion of medicine. Now, I don't know if the Oregon Health whatever school is here. Are they here at this meeting? So that's probably unfortunate, as if there's nothing between human health and sustainability that's actually linkable because it's highly linkable, but let's pick on them since they're not here. And so the Sustainability Institute that we have created is akin in my mind to what medical schools were designed to be when they first began evolving in North America 310 years ago. That is, they have an outcome and a focus, in their case, human health. In the case of sustainability, they have an outcome and a focus, in this case, not human health of the individual, in this case, the collective health of the interface between the natural environment and the built environment. And so, who could imagine not having medical schools? Who can imagine not having teaching, learning, and discovery enterprises related to human health that are very large and very big and operate on a large scale and are engaged in integrating whatever discipline needs to be integrated to produce that kind of outcome? And in fact, it turns out that the sustainability outcome that I'm talking about is even a more challenging outcome, a more difficult outcome, and probably requires more engagement from the rest of the university. So in a sense, we view this Global Institute of Sustainability as a early or first generation new model for universities operating under sustainability as an objective or with sustainability as an outcome objective, in the same way that medical schools evolved over the last couple hundred years. The second thing we've done is we've set challenging goals for ourselves, like carbon neutrality by 2025 for all of our functions not related to transportation. We mean every single function. No electricity, no carbon waste, no this, no that. We're well on our way to that. All business practices, all functions of the institution, all construction, all buildings, everything. Everything. And for instance, just as one item related to that, we've already invested through third-party partners $100 million in solar electric power plants on all four of our campuses just in the last 2 years, and we'll continue to do that until we have no purchased electricity, until we have nothing electric that's operating from anything that also puts off carbon as a function of the electrons being directly delivered to us. We launched a school of sustainability, which has about 600 students in it. It's focused on sustainability in the built environment with a bachelor's degree in sustainability, a master's degree in sustainability, a PhD in sustainability. We blew up all the disciplines in engineering, all of them. We had 11 disciplines in a 7,000 student engineering school, eliminated all the disciplines and created new schools, including the School of Sustainability in the Built Environment Engineering. That's another thing that's going on in engineering at the same time while we're building the School of Sustainability. We launched sustainability courses throughout the entire institution, have more than 15,000 students engaged in these courses, and have a sustainability module as a part of the introduction to the university for all of our 10,000 incoming freshmen and all of our 6,500 community college transfer students. So the new 16,500 undergraduates that we receive every August, we have sustainability as a part of what they're coming in and getting a little touch of awareness about. We've also worked to launch highly disruptive ideas. We think the universities have been laying around too long. Just lay around. They're like more like alligators or crocodiles. They just eat whenever something floats by. And so we don't want to be an alligator or a crocodile. We want to, I don't know what we'd be. We're more like a barracuda or something. You know, you got to get out there and really be moving around. And so we launched a thing called Lightworks. Lightworks is this idea that we have that you can actually build an entire economy in Arizona from photons. You could even do it in Oregon. There's lots of photons here. They just get interrupted from time to time. Lightworks is this notion of rethinking everything. Basically, declare all the stuff that's come before us as bad, bad, bad. It's bad that we dig up black stuff out of the earth, light it on fire, and burn it, contaminating the atmosphere as we do it. Why do we do it that way? Because we're lazy and stupid. It's true. Lazy, stupid, and greedy. There have to be some other ways. We all know what these other ways are, so start making that what we do. So we launched this enterprise that we call Lightworks. Lightworks is focused on basically converting photons into electrons, photons into molecules, photons into liquid fuels, photons into food, photons into medicine, whatever it happens to be. seed fund everybody, link everybody, hire everybody that you can possibly hire, bring them all together and see if you can get some kind of rise out of the system, some sort of countervailing force to get people, particularly the public, to look at things and view things in a different way. So you launch disruptive exercises. The other thing for us has been partner, partner, partner. So one of the reasons when Ed Ray invited me to come up to give this talk that I agreed on my way to another meeting I have tonight in San Jose is that we're looking for partners. The only way anyone can advance in any of these areas is to break down all these barriers, not only between the disciplines, but between the universities. And here you guys were all getting together, thinking about partnering and how to leverage your assets together. And I thought, well, that's great. Well, maybe we could find some way to partner with those folks up in Oregon, and we could learn from them, and they could learn from us, and we could move things in a new direction. And I think the last point that I would make, and I didn't walk through the whole list of everything that we're doing, related to sustainability or so forth, the list is very long, and you can go to our Global Institute of Sustainability site, or you can go to sustainability at ASU site, and you can see all the stuff that we work on and all the projects that we're working on and what we're doing. And you can go to our one site, and you can see how all our buildings are working, and you can see how our solar power plants are operating and what they're producing in terms of electricity and how they're functioning. And you can look at all that stuff because we built this sort of interactive web for all of that. But it's basically this notion that what we have decided is the following, just to put this in summation. Universities have failed to be the teachers that they need to be. They've been insufficiently innovative for very long periods of time. It's time to be innovative. It's time to take on certain outcomes. Maybe everybody doesn't have to do this, but I guess I would say my other reason for wanting to come up to Oregon, you would think that these universities here at Oregon would be like leading the world in these kinds of ideas because of all the things that at least symbolically Oregon stands for. At least to an outsider looking in, it's like, well, Oregon must be the Mecca. And I figure that, you know, this is the gathering. So I'm happy to be here. And so is this last concept of innovate everywhere. Innovate everywhere. Everywhere. We're at a fantastic moment in the history of public higher education to make innovation necessary, but also to make it something that you make a part of everything you do at every level of the institution. Everything you do at every level of the institution. And so that's sort of the central theme that has driven us after reconceptualizing this notion of sustainability as an outcome that we work toward. And so an exercise, just to give you a sense of what I mean by outcome, an exercise that we went through a few years ago that helped us to design our Global Institute of Sustainability. It was, we went away on this retreat for like 5 days, and we brought in these fantastic geniuses from all over the world who knew a lot more about sustainability than we did, all the people that led all the National Academy of Sciences stuff, people from Europe, people from Latin America, people from Asia, people from Africa, people from everywhere, and we said, what should we do? What should we really focus on? And they said, focus on making yourself accountable. So we had another accountable for what you do. So this will sound silly, but we went back to Phoenix and we said, well, who would have ever imagined that anything related to sustainability could come out of this place? 4 million people living in the middle of a desert for reasons no one can actually explain. That's just the 4 million people in Phoenix. There's another million down in Tucson and a lot of more unusual people living in between. And so what we started doing is we started looking at certain kinds of measurable outcomes. So for instance, I'll just pick one as an outcome. This is what I mean by an outcome. So this is a fourth level outcome below the nature of sustainability as an outcome. So the fourth level down outcome would be the nighttime heat index in Greater Phoenix has increased, that is the temperature at night, the low temperature at night, has increased 15 degrees in 20 years. So last summer, for instance, we had several nights where the temperature did not go below, before that moment at dawn, did not go below 94. Now in the normal desert, hot during the day, cool at night. But in the built environment desert, hot during the day, not cool at night. Transpiration rates change. Insect species begin to vary. coyotes and other nocturnal animals that feed at night. Others that are out moving around at night have much more difficult time because it's not cool. So you start looking at, you're talking about a core effect on the local ecosystem and the maintenance of that local ecosystem in that one particular place. So we have set, as silly as this sounds, that Arizona State University, as an institution, will make one of its fourth level outcome effects that will measure our own success. Did the nighttime heat index go down or not? And someone will say, well, how can you be accountable for that? That's exactly the problem. Because we're not. Because we haven't thought it through. Then they'll say, well, engineers will come up with these ideas and no one will use them. You got it. That's the problem. So just off to the side, by the way, we spent $7 million and built a thing called a decision theater. And in the decision theater, we run a center called the Decision Center for a Desert City, where we try to make decisions about how to actually allocate water that aren't based on politics only. They're based on politics and science. And we raised $15 million to run this center in addition to the decision theater itself. So again, it's about the fact that we can come up with scientific solutions, but no one listens. So back to the nighttime heat index. We can come up with solutions that no one listens to. Therefore, we are a failure. Because we haven't figured out how to teach decision makers. We haven't figured out how to teach economists. We haven't figured out how to teach whoever it is to actually help to produce that outcome. And so there goes that nighttime heat index, which of course is, as I said, a fourth level outcome. So we've been working on reconceptualizing who we are, what we are, how we work, and how we do it, and we do not care what anyone else thinks. And the reason I say that is because it doesn't make any difference what people think about whether or not you're behaving according to some historic model about what a university is supposed to be. Because if we had done so well as universities, how would we possibly be where we are now? If we had gotten it right, how would we possibly be where we are? We wouldn't be. So therefore, we got to find some new ways. So I appreciate the invitation to be here and happy to take questions or comments. Thank you. And if people, when they say something, if they could just tell me their name and where they're from so I can have a few more seconds to process your question.
I'm a graduate student from Portland State University, and most of my studying system science, most of my back formal training is in economics, and I just finished up a design and science and technology policy fellowship at the National Academy. So I think you had a presentation on sustainability or innovation last fall that I was going to go to and I missed.
Yeah. They invited me for a lecture that they later regretted because I was a little bit more cantankerous than I am right now.
Just kind of thinking back to like the university as a center of innovation or a way to transfer knowledge to, coming from a social science and economics background, to generate innovation and science and technology kind of towards innovation, towards economic growth, what are kind of some of the dynamics between economic growth and sustainability, innovation and technology towards sustainable solutions? What's going to be interplay between sustainability and economic growth and innovation?
Well, I mean, they're all intertwined, unfortunately, in a crudely sad, ineffectual model right now where we're advancing on economic growth. It still is the case that land apparently only has use for 100 years, so apparently you can still strip mine the top off the top of a mountain, never restoring that natural setting because you bought the land. And so what we have is we have economic development, energy development, energy systems development, energy systems acquisition, the Gulf case of BP and so forth and so on, all of which were economically rational events, which led to horrific outcomes that for whatever reason we haven't yet developed the tools to help us to make better decisions. And so economic development and sustainability are intertwined dramatically but we lack the tools, devices, and mechanisms in general. There are exceptions to this. In general, we haven't valued ecosystem services. To the, although Costanza's here somewhere, and others that have been in that literature for a long time, there's a lot going on in that arena, but not enough. There's not enough energy. There's not enough weight yet going into linking how we might advance economically and how we might advance simultaneously for sustainable outcomes. And so that's, to me, it's a wide open area. We're hiring everybody we can hire that's in sustainability economics and just to try to create better ideas and better tools. And so it's a grossly under-equipped intellectual space right now. There's somebody back in the back there.
Hi, I'm Vicki Elmer from the University of Oregon. Could you talk a little bit more about your board, your governing board, and the relationship that you have with them, and about the pushback that you might get, and who appoints your governing board, and about the pushback from the faculty? I just wonder what led them to hire you to disrupt everything like that.
Well. Who's been down to Arizona? Anybody been down there? It's like really different, so let me start there. And so, in a positive way. And so, and there's some negative manifestations that come along with that. But it is the place, the board. We have one board that, we have three universities in Arizona. The University of Arizona in Tucson, ASU, which is in Metro Phoenix, and Flagstaff has NAU, which then operates in a couple of other places in Yuma and in Yavapai County. So we have one board of about 10 members. They're appointed by the governor. They serve for eight-year terms. They're confirmed by the Senate, so they are political appointees with elongated terms that go beyond the life of a single politician. The board, in our case, is focused on access issues, cost of tuition, things like that. The legislature is focused on financial investment issues. They're not focused on anything else. They defer to the universities to determine their own intellectual agenda, which is fantastic. They allow the universities to operate in whatever level of innovation you can succeed at. If you fail, then you'd be dismissed, I guess. And so there's a high tolerance for innovation, a high tolerance for moving in new directions. So we have a new school of human evolution and social change, a new school of sustainability, a school of earth and space exploration, a school of family and social dynamics, and a whole bunch of other things, all of which were the product of our faculty's energy. The faculty engagement in what we've been doing has been very high. I mean, I would say that the last 7 years have gone maybe a little bit better than the first 2 years. Where you're laying down new ideas, and at least for me in my appointment. And so the central thing for us in changing the faculty's engagement was to basically outline with as much clarity as we possibly could the purpose of the institution, that we were going to be an institution that would strive to have high levels of access, that we would grow as a function of that we would have as diverse a student body as we possibly could, and that we would perform at the same level as more selective public universities. And if you wanted to, and that we would have these mission themes like sustainability. And if you wanted to be at another institution, you should go there. Because that's the direction that this institution is going to go. Now, not very many people left. Nearly everyone signed up for that. And they signed up for that and now have even embraced it to the extent that it's happily for me, it's not dependent on me. It's now self-guided. And so I don't know if that answers each of the parts of your question. I mean, what I'll say is that in issues like sustainability, Arizona is a place with large numbers of libertarians, but even the libertarians have high value for natural aesthetics. And even the libertarians do not want the natural environment to be dramatically and permanently negatively altered. And so there's a level of support from the right side of the political spectrum all the way to the left side of the political spectrum, ranchers, everyone. And so we've not met political resistance on intellectual topics, where we meet political resistance is, you know, we're, by the time they're done with us in this legislative session, we'll have a 60% reduction in per student funding from the legislature. So we have to obviously adjust to that very rapidly, deal with that, make our adjustments, move forward in different ways, and get about our business. There's strong support for innovation at the institutions and strong support for disruption.
Hello?
Yes?
I was kind of wondering, all these things that making your school for sustainability and a master's in sustainability, I'm wondering, are students coming out, I mean, it's avant-garde, it's new, are students coming out and getting jobs in these, with this type of very specific credential? It seems like it might be difficult for them to market themselves in with such a new degree.
So let me say we're sensitive to that, but we're not overly sensitive to that. So we basically operate under the notion that sustainability is an outstanding area through which one can learn about complexity. Sustainability is a fantastic set of subjects where one can learn about any number of things. I mean, you might go into law school, you might go to medical school, you might go to, if you come out as a bachelor's degree student, you might get a master's in sustainability and then later get a PhD in something else. It's a fantastic transdisciplinary field. Our students are getting employed and they're doing very well, but that's not why we set the school up. We set the school up to enhance the learning of students interested in learning that level of complexity. We set the school up to enhance the ability of our institution to have an amalgamation of faculty and students working around this important problem. Because we don't, if we put that metric, not that you were saying this, but if we put the metric of employment at the back end of our various schools, well, there's a lot of schools we would, like, we have a really big theater school. And they might not all go into theater, but they're fantastically educated. And so, but yes, are they being employed? Yes, our first PhD students are just coming out, and they're looking around and getting a number of interviews and offers. This is just occurring just as we speak. The master students, yes, our early bachelor students. We also, our business school called the W.P. Carey School of Business also has a BA in sustainability that they work with the School of Sustainability, and out of that program, all of those students are being employed, all of them, in that specialization. So now we have about 9,000 undergraduate business students, so only 400 are in sustainability, but those 400 are getting employed. So we run our Global Institute of Sustainability with a directorate, sort of a European model where it's more than one individual. So there's a director, the dean, and an executive director. And the executive director, who I think was just up at PSU recently visiting up there, his name is Rob Melnick. He, working with the University Economic and Corporate Affairs Office, works on building multiple levels of partnerships, strategic partnerships. So we have a partnership with the City of Phoenix. We wrote a grant with the City of Phoenix. We won the grant from the Department of Energy related to making Phoenix a green city, $25 million from the Department of Energy and $500 million of loan guarantees from the Department of Energy, $25 million cash for the projects and $500 million in loan guarantees. That's a joint project between, I don't know, 20 or 30 companies, the City of Phoenix and the university. We have other projects like that in other communities, and so we work on those. We have a project right now that involves about 80 corporations, Walmart, Carrefour, Disney, Pepsi, Coke, you know, major corporations where we're deriving a sustainability index. And the sustainability index is being scientifically grounded in the research of our business school, our sustainability school, other supply chain people, scientists, engineers, and others, where they're coming up with a measurable indicator that will go on every product. Pick Walmart, for instance. Every product that Walmart sells will ultimately have a sustainability index indicator on it. All their suppliers, more than 100,000 suppliers, will be subject to this. Same with Carrefour, which is like Walmart in Europe. And so, and then Disney as a supplier, they're on board, just using them as an example. So we have projects like that. And then we also work in clusters around different renewable energy cluster areas, algae technologies, the things related to the Lightworks thing that I mentioned. And then we also have, we've organized a renewable energy cluster that we help to facilitate in Metro Phoenix, working with industry groups. We've put a lot of energy into beating Oregon and all these things we keep losing, these solar energy things. And so, you're supposed to laugh. And so there was a lot of concern that too many things were getting sited in Oregon. And so then we started a coalition where we would now focus on engaging in global marketing related to renewable energy technology, manufacturing facilities, research facilities, testing facilities. We took our university testing facility, we had a solar testing facility. We sold 80% of it to a German company. The German company moved assets, bought a new building, built it at the Phoenix airport. It's now an 80-20 deal between us and them. And it's now the global testing thing for solar, which then we're not going to do another one for algae-based technologies. We're going to do another one for something else and another one for something else with private sector partners. And so I can't go through all the things that we're working on, but those are examples of the ways that we're working. And then we got a $100 million investment from the city of Scottsdale, and we built this project called SkySong. You can look at that at the website also, which is an innovation center. And in that innovation center, then we have a cluster around renewable energy, including student companies, student sustainability companies. We got a guy up in Seattle to endow our, his name is Oren Edson, the Edson Center for Student Entrepreneurship, which actually funds student companies. And then they're clustered in with other things that are going on and other stuff like that. Yeah.
Hi, David Alloway. I work with the state of Oregon. Thanks very much for your presentation. Mm-hmm. My question is, does your university have a common definition of sustainability? The term means very different things to different people. Do you have a common definition, or did you decide you didn't need one? And if you do have one, how was it derived, and how did you get everyone's buy-in to it?
Yeah, we sort of have one. If you go to our sustainability initiative stuff, you'll see it there. If you go to our sustainability institute, you'll see it there. It's sort of what I was talking about, this interface between the science of this interface between the built environment and the natural environment. And how did we get there? We got there through about like 4 years of arguing. And ultimately we said, the clock is running out of time here. The basketball game's almost over. That's it. We'll go with that. And then we'll come back and we'll look at it. As we move forward, we basically have consensus around that. And so, it's there. Is it perfect? No. Is it adequate? Yes.
Is OIT
the Oregon Institute of Technology? Okay. Because I don't know all the acronyms. Is that in Klamath Falls? Yeah, okay.
I love the idea of centralization of sustainability.
I think your microphone might not be on. But.
Hello?
Yeah.
Okay. I love the idea of centralization of sustainability in education, but the more research I do, the more that I find that sustainability, the concept of sustainability seems to conflict with the foundation of the monetary system as a whole, because in the monetary system, it doesn't always make sense to make the most efficient product. How do you envision, or how do you attempt to confront that contradiction of a truly sustainable society achieving that through education as it contradicts with the foundation of the monetary system?
So economics, I suspect what you mean by monetary system is not literally the monetary system, but the broader financial system. So I'll take your question to mean the broader financial system that we operate in. So our approach to that is to basically agree with your concern and your conclusion, and to say that we have a lot of work to do, and to make as many investments as we can in our business school and our economics department, which is in our business school, by saying to them that we're going to expand the intellectual breadth of economics as a discipline as broadly as we can around this concept of sustainability. So We've been hiring different people, Charles Perrings, Kerry Smith, Mike Hanneman, different people that we've been bringing in. And I think we've put 5 more on the table or 10 more on the table, folks like that, to bring them in to build a critical mass of disruptors. And so what we're after is focused disruptors that are linked to our Sustainability Institute to join with other disruptors. There are some here in Oregon, there's some in New York, they're in different places, to basically try to tackle the problem that you're articulating, and that is that we lack the tools and we lack the models and we lack the means to basically be able to do many of the things that we need to do, because sustainability as an outcome is difficult to value. If you can't value it, then how do you get there and how do you do it except by some moral driver? And moral drivers, they don't seem to work as well if you look at human behavior. And so moral drivers are insufficient. And so we need economic drivers, which means we need new economic tools. We need new market tools. And so we're a long, long way from that. And so that's one of the intellectual areas of focus for us, not just us, but lots of places. Again, calling it the present economic system that we have, or financial system, that we could achieve the levels of sustainability necessary within an unmodified system? No. No. But I'm also of the view that you'd have to come up with something better than what we presently have, which no one has done yet. There were some big attempts. What was that one guy's name? Marx, I think his name was. And so, you know, he had some ideas, and it doesn't seem to have worked. And so maybe there's some other ideas that are out there. So.
We have time for just one last question.
My name is John Driscoll. I was just accepted as a PhD student to the System Science Department at PSU.
Mm-hmm.
I think you have a wonderful university outside of Scottsdale, Taliesin West.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just wondering how the ideas of Frank Lloyd Wright tie into.
Yeah, so Wright in his Taliesin West, for those of you that haven't been there, is one of his homes that Frank Lloyd Wright lived in, and it was a place in which he accelerated his thinking about this relationship between the natural environment and where we live. And so that's at the theme of what we do. Our architects are involved both at Taliesin and at ASU, and those architects are involved with us in sustainability. Very challenging, you know, because when the rubber meets the road in actual designing of cities and designing of housing areas and so forth and so on, economics seems to always trump other factors. But it is a part of our logic. It is a part of our connection. It is something that we're linked to, probably not as much as we think that we should be at the moment, but on a conceptual basis, it is an important intellectual grounding for us right now. Yes. So, thank you, everybody.